Okay, well, let's pick up on chapter 14 then in Exodus. It says, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, tell the sons of Israel to turn back and camp before Pi-Hathroth between Migdol and the sea, and you shall camp in front of Baal-Zephon opposite it by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the sons of Israel, they are wandering aimlessly in the land, and the wilderness has shut them in. Thus I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will chase after them, and I will be honored through Pharaoh and all of his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord." And they did so. Now, I was just mentioning in the last chapter about how it may seem like these people are wandering aimlessly in the desert, okay? And it certainly appears that way. But God's leading them. Now, I don't know how many times I have felt like this. I don't know how many if you've felt it, but sometimes I feel like, man, I just don't know where I'm going, you know, spiritually. I mean, I know where I'm going in a sense, but it's like, you know, you ever get the kind of the doldrums where you just feel like, gosh, I don't seem to be making much progress here, and you know, the Lord doesn't seem to be using me, and you know, in spite of all the efforts and the time and the money and the energy and everything that's being spent, you know, it just seems like you're either marking time, like I said, going two steps up, one step back, one step up, two steps back, you know, and you wonder, well, where am I going with this? Is this going anywhere at all? Well, you know, from our perspective, you know, it certainly doesn't seem like we're accomplishing much, but God has a purpose in that, okay? And one of the purposes that he did have in that was that he's training these people to follow him, regardless of where he goes. Even if it doesn't seem like he's going in the right direction, we're going to follow him. And in the process of following him, it does what? I mean, we get in some exercise and some discipline and that aerobic kind of, you know, spiritual exercise that we need, our souls need, okay? And God knows we need, and he's training us. He's building us up for the journey, so to speak. And he has a purpose for it, okay? And the world looks like, well, there's somebody going nowhere fast, you know? But in an essence, if you have Christ, even though you don't seem like you're going anywhere in your life, you are. If you are just following him. Like Jesus said in the Gospel of John, I think 14th chapter, my sheep know my voice, and they hear my voice, and they follow me. Okay? That's the asset. Are you following Christ? Even though it may seem like, oh, gee, you know, I've been just going around in circles here. But if you're following him, you don't have to worry because he has a purpose for it. And the end result is going to be to glorify him and for your own, you know, well-being and edification. But anyway, Pharaoh looks on and he says, hey, man, these guys, they're wandering around out there. They're lost. And now Pharaoh's heart's hard. I mean, he's looking at the situation and a couple of things. All the Egyptians wanted to get rid of the Israelites. They wanted to get rid of the Hebrews in a hurry after that, you know, all their firstborn had died. And the Egyptians were just giving them all kinds of spoils, all kinds of wealth and material things. And they said, hey, you know, just go. Well, now, I guess it's been a few weeks later, and, you know, they're looking at their land that's been destroyed. And they're looking at their pocketbooks that are now empty, and now they're having a lot of second thoughts, right? And they're wandering around out there, and they're saying, "Hey, man, let's just go." I don't know if their intention is to bring them back as slaves, which probably was one of the motives for it. But I know that they wanted their spoils back. They wanted all that wealth back, okay? And they wanted revenge, okay? And they were going to get it. And so, you know, this is where their hearts are becoming hardened by, of course, Satan's entering into their hearts as well, you know, telling them, hey, man, now's your chance. Now's the chance to strike. Then it says here in verse 5, it says that, then the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled. Pharaoh and his servants had had a change of heart towards the people, and they said, what is this we have done, that we have let Israel go from serving us? So he made his chariots ready, and he took his people with him. And he took 600 select chariots and all the other chariots of Egypt with the officers over all of them. And the Lord hardened the hearts of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and he chased after the sons of Israel as the sons of Israel were going out boldly. Now, here's the interesting thing, okay, is that apparently Pharaoh is leading this charge. And it says here that he made his chariot ready, and he took his people with him. So he's going out on a chase leading them. And then it says here, and he took 600 select chariots and all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. So what's suggested here is this, is that there are three men in each chariot. There's a driver, there's an officer, and there's a soldier. So if you got 600 chariots, well, that's 1,800 men, right? They're going, but he also, that's just Pharaoh's chariots. Now, all the other chariots that they could marshal up out of Egypt, so there's probably, hundreds more that weren't part of Pharaoh's select army, okay? Plus, apparently, he had foot soldiers. So, we're talking an army of thousands of men and all these chariots that are going to go, really wreak havoc on these people. I mean, their intention is to really start killing a lot of these people and then enslaving the rest of them and then taking all the spoils. They were just going to get revenge, okay, because their whole heart system has now changed. And then, in a sense, Pharaoh represents who?
Well, the devil.
He represents Satan. And, all of these officers and men under him represent his demonic hordes, and then, of course, the people of the world who are against his people, okay? And they're out to destroy him. There's no question about it. And then in verse 8 it says, then the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he chased after the sons of Israel. All the sons of Israel were going out boldly. That's kind of interesting. They were going out boldly from Egypt. There was a lot of pomp, a lot of ceremony. They were all happy, and they were just, all this boldness. And this is what happened very often. You accept the Lord, and you get all, this boldness and this zeal and everything. But then the devil starts coming up, and, wham, knocks you on your backside. And, what happened? Because that's just about what's going to happen here. In verse 9, it says, and the Egyptians chased after them with all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army, and they overtook them camping by the sea beside Pihahiroth in the front of Baal Zephon. Now, I don't know where this is located at. Nobody seems to know exactly where it's located at. If you look at this map here, you see this Gulf of the Suez, and here's the Red Sea down in here. Okay, here's the Mediterranean Sea, and the sea actually just goes from the Mediterranean down into the Gulf of Suez. Well, I don't know if you can see this point here. Now, this is where it's suggested that they cross. Okay, now this is speculative because nobody knows for sure, but apparently, where they crossed, the crossing was at least a mile wide, okay? And it may have been as much as 5 miles wide from the looks of this map here, okay? And it was referred to as the Sea of Reeds, which is also known as the Sea of the Red Sea. Now, they're up against this, their back against the wall, so to speak, all right? And God has really, he's brought them to that very point for a very specific purpose. Of course, they don't know it yet. All right? It's going to seem like the end to them. But this is what God will very often do in our own lives, right? He will put us in situations where, it will seem like, hey, this, what are we doing here? This is this, it seems like such an impossible thing to deal with. But God will bring us there bring us to that point in our life for what? To strengthen our faith. Because you better believe that once they go through this experience, their faith is greatly strengthened because of the experience. All right? So what it says here in verse 9, it says, then the Egyptians chased after them with all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and the horsemen of his army, and they overtook them camping by the sea beside Pihahiroth in the front of Baal Zephon. And Pharaoh drew near, and the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened. So the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. And they said to Moses, is it because there was no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in a wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Is not the word that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. But Moses said to the people, do not fear, stand by, see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you will never see them again forever. The Lord will fight for you while you keep silent. Okay, this is very, very powerful, okay? Because now they go out boldly, they're all, all pumped up, and then all of a sudden the first thing that comes along, they, we're going to die, this is all your fault, Moses, and they're all, they're at their wit's end. that's so to speak, when the people saw this, okay, what they said is, hey, weren't there enough graves in Egypt? Aren't there enough graves in Egypt, you know, that we have to die out here in the wilderness? I think that's very significant. First of all, Egypt was noted for its tombs, for its gravestones, for its, you know, its graves, right? Egypt symbolizes what? The world, right? And you look at it from a spiritual perspective, I think it's very significant, because the only thing the world has to offer any of us in the end is nothing more than a grave. Think about it. That's what I think is very symbolic of what the world has to offer us. Nothing. Zilch, nada. Nothing more than a tomb. Okay? So, then it says here that Moses says something that is very, very profound. He says, Moses, in verse 13, Moses said to the people, do not fear, stand by, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you will never see their face again forever. And, you know, he's saying here, God's going to do it. You know what? You know, you don't have to do a thing. You don't have to lift a finger. He's going to, okay, bring about your salvation. And like Dan says, you know, when it says here that you'll never see their face again forever, I think that last word is very significant, because there's going to be a separation, you know, eternal separation between God's people and the world's people, the devil's people. In verse 14, it says, the Lord will fight for you while you keep silent. You know, the Bible says, be still and know that I am God, right? And I think that that's what we've got to do sometimes, is just say, be still and wait on God and know that he is God and trust him. That's what they've got to do. They just got to trust him. And then in verse 10, it says, then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Take the sons of Israel to go forward. In other words, you know, hey, now's not the time to be praying, Moses. Now's the time to act. And there is some times like that, okay? When it's time to, we need to pray, like the Bible says, pray without ceasing. But at the same token, it's time to act. Okay, and that's what God is telling Moses. He says, tell Israel to go forward. Okay, and as for you, lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, and the sons of Israel shall go through the midst of the sea on dry land. And as for me, behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them, and I will be honored through Pharaoh and all of his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. Then the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord, and when I'm honored through Pharaoh, through his chariots and his horsemen. And the angel of God, who had been going before the camp of Israel, moved and went behind them, and the pillar of the cloud moved from before them and stood behind them. Now, look at that verse 19. And the angel of God, who had been going before them, the camp of Israel, this is none other than the pre-incarnate Christ. Okay, because this is not just an angel. This is the angel of God. This is, you know, Christ himself that was leading them as a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. It says here that now he goes behind them. So read it again in verse 19. And the angel of God, who had been going before the camp of Israel, moved and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them. In other words, you know, now God was leading them. Now he's going to protect them. Okay, he's going to keep the Egyptians from being able to get to the Hebrews. And it says in verse 20, so it came between the camp of Egypt and the camp of Israel, and there was a cloud along the darkness, along with darkness, yet it gave light at night. Thus the one did not come near the other all night. When Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord swept the sea back by a strong east wind all night, and turned the sea into dry land, so the waters were divided, and the sons of Israel went through the midst of the sea on dry land, and the waters were like a wall to them on the right hand and on their left. And the Egyptians took up the pursuit. Now, what happens here is saying that God caused an east wind to blow all night. Well, he didn't, if you read this correctly, it's not saying that God caused an east wind to go through and divide the water. The waters were divided. The east wind blew all night, and it dried out the bottom of the sea, and the Israelites were going through, okay, on dry land. And they had water stacked up against them, you know, on each beside them, on each side, on their right and on their left. That must have been just absolutely awesome, because it's at night, they're going all night long, they're going. You know, now, we're talking right up 3 million people now. I don't know how wide this was. I mean, some people suggested, well, it probably had to be wide enough for 5,000 people to go abreast. I don't think it had to be that wide. But these people were going through, hundreds at a time, going through this. Now, can you imagine going through this whole experience and looking up and looking? And it's, even though it's at night, they can see what's going on because the pillar of cloud is giving light for them to get through this dark, tunnel, so to speak. Okay? The whole experience must have been just absolutely mind-boggling. Absolutely, just awesome at what was transpiring here. And, you put yourself in their shoes. I mean, you're in the midst of this incredible miracle. I mean, you got to be just dumbfounded. Everybody must have been just looking at what's going on, what's happening, and just been absolutely shaken. I mean, it would have been me. It was just, this is so awesome, to see this incredible miracle taking place, and you're right in the smack in the midst of it. But you read in the book of Peter, and Peter talks about, I believe it's Peter, but he talks about how all of Israel went through the water. What did it symbolize? It was their baptism. What it was is they went through a place of death. That's what our baptism represents. Going down in the water represents dying to yourself and then rising with Christ. This is what represented them. This was their baptism. They were going through a place of death. There's dry land on the bottom of the ocean or the sea. Okay? By rights, they should have all been dead if they were down there. But it signified their baptism. All right? Verse 21 says, then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord swept the sea back by a strong east wind all night, and the sea turned into dry land, so the waters were divided. And the sons of Israel went through the midst of the sea by dry land, and the waters were like a wall to them on the right hand and on the left. And then the Egyptians took up their pursuit, and all of Pharaoh's horses and chariots and his horsemen went in after them in the midst of the sea. Now, you've got to have a real hardened heart to do this. I mean, you know what I'm saying? They had to be just blinded by rage, just blinded by hate, just blinded by contempt. And a lot of these soldiers, they had lost their firstborn, they had lost all their wealth, they had seen their country destroyed. And so there was just contempt in their heart, and they just wanted revenge. Okay? So it was like they're just blinded. And I would say this, how many people today are blinded by the truth? In other words, the truth is there, staring in the face, and they know it's the truth. They see it the truth, but their hearts are so hardened when it comes to things like abortion, when they're so hardened to the fact and the reality that, look, this is a human being, this is a child, okay, but they're gonna argue from now to the crack of doom that it's their choice and so on and so forth. Or take this whole episode of evolution. I mean, the evidence is overwhelming that there is an incredible genius and design behind everything. Just look at the DNA molecule and it will boggle your mind. There's so much information encoded upon that one molecule that you could put it in volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes of encyclopedias in a very small print. But we could look at that evidence and our hearts would be hardened and say, hey, it just happened. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. When people do not want to, look to God or be responsible to God or be accountable to God, this is how hardened they become. Just like Pharaoh and his armies, the evidence was overwhelming to them that, hey, don't do this. But their hearts were so hardened, they're going to do it anyway. See how Jeremiah says, the heart is deceitful above all things, it's desperately wicked. This is so true. And so we see what happens to Pharaoh here. And it says, verse 24, and it came about at the morning watch that the Lord looked down up on the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud and brought the army of the Egyptians into confusion. And he caused their chariots, the wheels to swerve and made them drive with difficulty. So the Egyptians said, let us flee from Israel, for the Lord is fighting for them against the Egyptians. So, in other words, all night long, God's people are passing through the Red Sea. Okay? And when the Egyptians went into the sea, there was enough room there to where they thought, hey, we can catch these guys. We'll catch them right here in the midst of the sea. And just before they caught up with them, then they're having all kinds of trouble because their chariot wheels start getting stuck. They start falling off and they start tumbling over each other. And they can't get to them. And you can imagine the stragglers, you know, saying, oh, man, here they come, you know, and they're trying to get out of there. But, you know, God's got everything in control, right? And the Egyptians can't get to them. And so the Egyptians are throwing their hands up and saying, hey, man, let's get out of here, man. This is too much. And they realize that God's fighting for them, and we're not going to make it. In verse 26, then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may come back over the Egyptians, over the chariots, and over their horsemen. So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal state at daybreak, while the Egyptians were fleeing right into it. And then the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea, and the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen, even Pharaoh's entire army that had gone into the sea after them. Not even one of them remained. But the sons of Israel walked on dry ground through the midst of the sea, and the waters were like a wall to them on the right and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. And when Israel saw the great power which the Lord had used against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord, and they believed the Lord in the Lord and his servant Moses. Now, you know, you put yourself in their position, and okay, these people were crying out to Moses saying, hey, man, you know, you've really done us wrong. You know, you've let us out here. There weren't enough graves in Egypt that we were going to die out here. We should have just served the Egyptians. Well, look at the experience that they went through. Okay, through that experience, their faith was greatly, greatly strengthened. Okay, because once you get on the other side, when we get into the 14th chapter, we'll read about, you know, how Miriam takes on a tambourine and they all begin singing and praising God for his great deliverance, because it was a mighty deliverance. It was just incredible, right? And, you know, you got to apply it to our own lives. I mean, we look at a lot of the trials, the sufferings, the disappointments, the heartbreaks, the disillusions that we may go through. But these things, you know, if we really follow God, follow his lead, these things are meant to really strengthen us, to strengthen our faith, to temper us like, you know, to fashion and shape and mold us like tempered steel, you know. This is what God intends to do for us, okay? Because if they hadn't gone through that experience, their faith in God would not have been able to grow as much, okay? Unfortunately, it hasn't grown as much as it should. And this is what happens to a lot of people, too, because, you know, God will put them through experience where it should have a real maturing effect upon them, okay, and really strengthen them in their faith. It only strengthens them a little bit, because you see what's going to happen to these Israelites is that, you know, 3 days into their journey, they begin murmuring and griping and complaining again and again and again and again and again until to the point where God just several different times says to Moses, hey, get out of the way. I'm going to destroy these people, and I'm going to make a great nation out of you. I mean, God gets fed up with them because God knows, hey, I've demonstrated to you more, you know, over and over and over again my power and my love and my commitment to you. And all you have to do is just trust and obey. Just believe. But these people were so stubborn. And, you know, this is given to us for our example, for our reproof, for our edification. You know, we got to look back and say, hey, we can just as easily do it as they did. So we need to learn from their mistakes. That's what a wise person will be able to do. Anybody have any I don't want to share?